Now from the studios of Fox Sports Knoxville, this is It's Optional with Trey Wallace, Chance Collins, and Brandon Johns. What do you see?
Dobbs needs it. They're bunched up in the end zone. It's tipped up. It's caught. It is caught. Juwan Jennings. Juwan Jennings.
Bobble, and he just dumps it off for a first down. Throws it, fakes the spike. In the end zone, touchdown. Whoa. Jordan Lasley.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap, and the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson, and he scores on the last play of the game.
It's Optional. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're good out there, wherever you are and whatever you are doing. We are rolling along here today. Things have already been interesting in college basketball as Tennessee is the new number one team in the country. Congratulations to the Tennessee Volunteers coming off the nice win Saturday, hard-fought win Saturday over Alabama. So they are the new number one. To my right, Chance Collins. In front of me, Brandon Johns. Good afternoon, boys.
What up, Trey Wallace?
You're excited.
What up, Vol fans?
I can tell you.
Your Tennessee Vols, my Tennessee Vols, are number one in the country.
Yeah, that's a little now, crazy
yes.
today.
Now, yes, March means everything. And what's a ranking? What's a ranking in January? Not really much. But by God, to all the Barnes bashers, I'm sorry, Trey. I'm going to be really excited today. I'm sorry. I hope you can bear with me.
I
hope you can bear with me. Turn your headphone volume down, you and Brandon. I'm very sorry. There's going to be a lot of enthusiasm in my voice. I'm very sorry. But I'm really not sorry. Because all the Barnes bashers, all the people that said Rick Barnes was on his retirement plan, vacation at Barnes's, he's retirement Rick. Look at the development. They say trust the process in Philadelphia. Trust the Volsess. Can we start that? I'm trying to start that. The Volsess. Whether you want to look at it as the Vol process or Vol success, just look at it. It feels damn good to have the major athletics shining bright right now in basketball. Number one. I mean, just think about where we've come from, Trey. Look at Rick Barnes. This is remarkable for somebody to do from the roster he had bestowed upon him, and what people said he didn't have anybody on the roster, and the development that he has shown that he is capable of doing, the development of these players. Just look at it, man. It feels damn good. I might shed a tear today.
Tennessee's sitting at number one in the country. They got 48 out of 64 votes. Which was, I mean, that's kind of a landslide compared to where things were last week. They got 13 first-place votes. So Duke goes down earlier last week to the Q's, and then they take care of Virginia on Saturday, but it was not enough to keep them in the number one spot. Tennessee with the close win over Alabama, who played a good game, and it was a back-and-forth ball game. On Saturday, Tennessee was, they got down by four at one time. They fought right back in it. Interesting play there towards the end with the travel call. Tennessee takes full advantage of it, and now they sit here on this Monday morning. Kind of predicted, but a lot of people around the country just didn't know if the AP was still going to give Duke the benefit of the doubt. But now you can put that to rest. Brandon, your thoughts coming off Saturday's win and just Tennessee fans having something to hang their hat on now, in a way, a marking.
Yeah, I mean, like Grant Williams said, though,
yeah,
not playing for a ranking, playing to hang banners.
Agreed.
In March. So, yeah, it's good now. Don't get me wrong. But my main focus today was on whether Tennessee was going to be ranked number one or not. But this weekend was NFL football.
Yeah, which was crazy. Yeah, that's a good point, too. We're going to get into all that because I was highly pissed off yesterday.
I'm sure you were.
At the Saints game. That was
coming hot on that topic.
Yeah, that
too.
Was an atrocious
We're
going to
have
play.
A lot of fun with that one.
And then you look at last night's game where you had the Pats and the Chiefs. Too much time on the board. They left the Pats. They come back down. Things go to overtime. And the Patriots take care of business. There's not a lot you can say. Once you give Tom Brady the ball at the end of the game, it doesn't matter if it's in overtime or in regulation, things probably aren't going to go out well for you. So I found that to be – there are so many bad calls this weekend all over the league that it was embarrassing. And it's something that we'll talk about today. We'll take your phone calls on that. We'll take your phone calls on Tennessee basketball, 865-546-8200. We'll talk all about it. This is a day of kind of celebration for Tennessee of where they've gotten in the past 10 years to where they're sitting at right now. And I think the number one is good, and I get that a lot of people are going to say, okay, you know, you're number one now, but it matters where you – okay, I know that it matters where you finish in March, but if you're a Tennessee fan, you're finally back on top
in
dominant sport.
Don't let the views and like what you're looking forward to in March and what's going to happen in March, like don't let that ruin the good feeling that you should have today. I think I know what you're saying. Like, yes, March matters. It does matter, like Brandon said, about hanging banners, not about how many times Tennessee can be number one over the course of the basketball program. But at the same time, it's been kind of miserable. And basketball has been the only thing to hang your hat on for the last couple of years. So, yeah, go out and you know, cheers with your buddy. Have yourself a beer today or something like that. Yeah, right. Be happy. Like, I mean, serious. Be happy for the day. Like the players. I mean, it's one thing for the fans to be happy about the number one ranking. Yeah, the players should kind of Butch Jones snap and clear. Yeah, they have to stay focused. Rick Barnes has them on the, you know, stay focused. Don't worry about the outside noise. That's great for the players. Fans, have fun today. Be happy.
Yeah, I agree. Enjoy it.
Be soak proud it at the water cooler.
Yeah, soak it in and enjoy it. It's more or less, when you really break it down, it's more or less of a time where Tennessee basketball can now go on the road to Vanderbilt come Wednesday night. I look forward to being there in Nashville on Wednesday. It'll be an interesting atmosphere because I think, personally, there's probably going to be 4,000 to 5,000 Tennessee fans there, and that's the reason why it is a sellout. I mean, Vanderbilt's 0-5 in the conference. I mean, that's just ugly basketball. Tennessee coming to town, I expect the mid-state area to show up, and I expect some fans to go on the road as well to Nashville. So, but the last time Tennessee was ranked number one in the country, they went into Vanderbilt. Now, let's face it, Vanderbilt was a hell of a lot better team back then when this scenario was going down and Tennessee's run at number one did not last too long. I expect it. I was talking with we're going to have Aaron Torres join us here at 1:20, and I was texting back and forth with him. And the biggest difference now with this team is that I honestly don't think this gets to the basketball club. Like this is not going to make their heads even bigger. I think this is a calm, cool, and collective bunch, and I think they take the number one ranking in stride. But the biggest thing now is, and this is going to show up a lot, Tennessee can now, for this week, even if it lasts just a week, which I don't think it will because I think it's going to last up until potentially Tennessee goes to South Carolina. If they can get the win there, they'll end up, I personally think, the end of January with the number one ranking. But now you go into Holmes, you can call recruits.
Holmes.
You can call other coaches. You can now say, hey, look, this is Rick Barnes, number one team, you know, Tennessee. You know, there's different ways to go about this. So that's I think it's the best part about it for Tennessee fans is, and for the university, is that you can throw that ranking up beside there. And in my personal opinion, who would ever thought that Tennessee men's basketball would have gotten back to number one before women's basketball?
Touche.
Like I don't think, and I could be mistaken. I don't think Tennessee women's basketball has been number one in the last 10 years.
No chance. Actually, 10 years. I guess if you count 2019, I think in 2008 they won the national title. Right. So that's I bet they were preseason up there.
That's true.
Yeah. Haven't been number one since Pat's been gone. We can go ahead and say that.
So number one of the country, and that's how big a do is now. It's more or less women's basketball is going down the tanker, and Tennessee basketball is rolling back up. So great weekend for them. They can still be excited.
Excellent weekend.
They'll have a basketball practice this afternoon, and then Rick Barnes will have a press conference tomorrow at noon, and then they will hit the road to Nashville for a Wednesday night game. Before we catch a break here in a minute, I want to get the quick thoughts of you guys on NFL weekend, on Championship Sunday. Saints and Rams.
Great games.
Chiefs-Pats.
I thought that Chiefs-Pats game lived up to the hype. That was a great game. I mean, we'll get into the Brady discussion. I know we will. We will have to. And with the Saints, yeah, the call that was not called, I know we're going to get into that. But there were good games. Saints, man, kind of just they got a little cold towards the end of the
that's
season.
That's such beat. Okay. All right. Don't do it, Trey. Don't do it. Don't show it. Don't show it, Trey.
Don't show don't your fandom.
No. It's not even a fandom. It's just stupid refereeing. Like, I can't get mad.
He still had a chance to win the game.
Yeah, they did have a chance. It would have been first and goal with the Pats. Okay. You know what? We're not getting into it right now. We'll talk about it after Torres. Into it. Yeah, well, we're going to talk about this crap. Aaron Torres coming up next on Fox Sports Knoxville. It's Optional. Brandon John's taking us out. It's Optional, Fox Sports Knoxville, rolling on this number one Monday for Tennessee Hoops. A fun weekend overall in the NFL. A little bit wild for me. Goodness gracious. My Saints blew it. Well, I'm not going to put it on the Saints. But oh, they did give up the lead, but still. I don't want to throw it all on my Saints. Put it on some of the officiating as well. And there's people out there talking about some kind of rule out there. And it's like, come on, grow up. They're not turning the game back around and saying, okay, let's roll. It just doesn't happen. We'll see. I'm having a hard time. Now I got to root for the Rams in the Super Bowl because I just don't feel like the Patriots win it again. So it is what it is. Continue roll. We'll talk about this whole game here in just a little bit. That was gut-wrenching, and then the Chiefs-Pats game. I felt bad for Chiefs fans all those years without making it to a Super Bowl, so feel bad for them. It's just ugly, just absolutely ugly. And that's what happens when you give Tom Brady the ball down there towards the end. Brandon, we ready to go, buddy? Yeah, we are. To talk about Tennessee hoops, to talk about SEC hoops and college basketball in general, some great games this past weekend and last week. Mr. Aaron Torres joins us now. Aaron, what up, buddy? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you guys. good to be home of the kings of college basketball right now, the number one ranked Tennessee Vols. I just saw the news became official. It is my, humble opinion that it's the right call. I think right now, they have the best combination of resume, overall record. They have the look. I know the eye test doesn't matter in sports, but I do think they have the look despite some struggles with Alabama. And it's an exciting day to be a Vol, I'm guessing. I'm guessing it's a very exciting day to be a Vol.
You know what? It's Aaron, it's fans that are able to enjoy being back on top in a big-time relevant sport. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's like, look, Tennessee's got track and field. Tennessee's had women's basketball in the past. Don't quite have it now. So, I look, talking to Tennessee fans and interacting with them on Twitter, they're just excited to be able to cheer about something like this. So, I think it's a big deal for today, but they still have to go out and handle business this week with Vanderbilt on tap and then West Virginia. So let's go back to Saturday and let's start off there. Then we'll get into Duke and others. You know, Tennessee hosts an Alabama team who's very stingy on defense. And in the way that John Petty was able to explode Saturday, get 30-some-odd points, had 6 or 7 assists. I mean, he was playing out of his mind. And Alabama seemed to bring it defensively. What do you think they did to throw off Tennessee a bit? Was it just the Vols' cold shooting at times, or was it the defensive package that Alabama was throwing out there with the 2-3 or even switching up to man every now and then?
Yeah, I think it was a few things. One, you know, I think that it was weird because even in the first half when Tennessee had a double-digit lead, it never felt like they were kind of quote-unquote either running away with the game or dominating or anything like that.
Right.
What it really was to me, just watching, and I was obviously flipping back and forth between a bunch of different games, but, you know, I really thought that Alabama, I think the thing we forget about Alabama, because they're not very good this year, they're not ranked, they don't have the surefire lottery pick like Colin Sexton, but one, they're coached by a former NBA coach of the year in Avery Johnson. He knows what he's doing. And two, you know, they actually have a lot of guys that are going to make a lot of money playing basketball. You know, Dante Hall down low, Herb Jones down low. Those are guys that the NBA is very aware of. And like, no, those guys aren't going to be lottery picks, but it isn't inconceivable that either that those guys with the measurables that they have can play in the NBA, even though, again, we don't think of them as quote-unquote superstars. And so I think that's what it was to me more than anything, is that maybe Alabama's personnel is a little bit better than I think most people realize. By the way, don't forget, this is a team that beat Kentucky earlier this season as well and really kind of controlled the game against Kentucky as well. So I think that's what it is to me more than anything. It was a team that obviously had motivation playing what was at the time, whatever it was, the number 3 team in the country on the road, but they also have the guys to back it up. And I guarantee you, whether Alabama makes the NCAA tournament or not, they're going to give a lot of really good teams a lot of trouble throughout the course of this season.
Looking at, I want to take a step back. One more question on Tennessee. When you look at when Rick Barnes was brought into Knoxville after his run at Texas, where it could come down to they just, you know, maybe they needed a fresh start on both ends, you know, between Rick and Texas. But he comes to Knoxville, and he made it a point to say Saturday after the game that, look, this is what these guys built. This is all on the players. This is what they started when they first got here to where they are now. This is their light. Talk to me a little bit about Rick Barnes, and what do you think it might mean to him to be able to get a program back on top?
You know, he's a really humble guy, kind of behind closed doors, and I think in the public. But look, I think that we also can't deny that when he left Texas, it was good, like you guys just said, for both guys to start over, or for both sides to start over. But, I mean, it kind of had to sting because Texas was routinely in the NCAA tournament. I forget the exact stat, but I think it was 16 out of 17 years or 16 out of 18 years or some just absolutely insane, you know, percentage relative to the fact that it is Texas basketball, that they really had no tradition. And so I think it had to sting a little bit when the fan base basically said, we're tired of getting to the NCAA tournament, but quote-unquote not winning enough once we get there. Well, we see it all the time. We see it in college sports all the time. The guy, they run the guy out of town. They think the next guy is going to be better. And I think Texas is really having some buyer's remorse on Shaka Smart right now. I mean, his best season was with Rick Barnes's players, gets to the tournament, loses, below 500 the following year. Last year they finished, I think, like 17 and 13, were probably about the last team into the NCAA tournament. Frankly, to this day, I still have no idea how they got in, period. And so, you know, I guess the point I'm trying to make is that Rick Barnes would never say it publicly, but I think he's got to be really happy, not only with the success, and I don't think he's wishing ill will against Texas, But it's got to feel pretty good to sit back and say, you know what, maybe some people in Austin now are realizing they didn't have things as bad as they thought they did when I was here.
Aaron, to stay on Coach Barnes a little bit, now you're talking about, Trey talked about, yeah, he's saying this is what the guys built. But he's done a hell of a job developing. We've talked about that, I don't know, for a couple weeks now. And when I was on the afternoon drive show, I mean, you talked about that last year. What does it say, though, or how he is doing it, but not, he's not having to go out and get the lottery picks? How tough is that in the sport now with Duke and with Kentucky doing it each year, and for him to, you know, just trust the process and stay true to his own philosophy and to develop players? And do you think you'll see teams kind of revert back to that, any of the blue bloods? I mean, North Carolina does it somewhat, but Barnes truly built this over the last years, and where Tennessee was before he got here and where they are now, it's truly remarkable in my eyes. I just want to get your thoughts on it even more.
Yeah, no, I agree, Chance. And, you know, I think it's the interesting dynamic of, you know, you got to have the right guys, right? And you think because Kentucky gets the best recruits every year that it's easy. You ask Kentucky fans right now, you ask John Calipari right now, it's really hard. And so there's no right or wrong way to do this. And I do think the last few years, Villanova, Michigan, programs like that have proven that it's better to probably have older players in college basketball without less NBA upside. But I'll tell you what, Duke looks pretty good right now. And so it's just that thing of you got to find, well, I think the biggest thing I would say, you got to find what works for you, right? And I it's funny because I'm kind of like flipping through a game that I missed this weekend, which is Villanova. And I think Villanova is in the weird spot now where they're starting to get interest from higher caliber recruits. I mean, every recruit wants to play for a winner, right? And who's won more than Villanova over these last two or three years? And so, you know, I think Jay Wright is trying to find that balance of, we want really good players, but they also have to be players that fit what we do, fit who we are, and are going to come in and again, be part of what we want to be a part of. And so I bring that up because with Tennessee, it's great to say, hey, let's have juniors and seniors, but it's got to be the right group of guys that's willing to grow, that's willing to get better, that isn't going to transfer. I mean, I think that's the most incredible part to me. I watched Tennessee, and I said this the other day on Twitter, Jordan Bowden could start for, I don't know, 300 fill-in-the-blank teams in college basketball right now. He comes off the bench. He doesn't complain. Lamonte Turner could start just about anywhere. And so it's got to be the right guys. And then you just got to, you know, you just got to hope it all kind of falls in line. And right now it is with Tennessee. And as you kind of just said with Nova and everybody else, it'll be interesting to see going forward, because certainly, as we know with some of the recruits they have coming in next year, Josiah James and guys like that, obviously the profile of Tennessee basketball is going up. It'll be curious to see the kind of guys they get. And then also, you know, can you get those guys while also staying true to who you are and what you do?
When you're looking at around the country and you see like the Duke matchup on Saturday night with Virginia, and it was back and forth, I give Virginia a lot of credit for staying in the fight and bringing it to them, and they're really trying to attack them down low. And then you look at a game, let's say on the flip side of the SEC with Auburn and Kentucky, where it's just, you know, Auburn's point guard play gets them back in it. You know, they're down 9, they're down 10 at points, but Auburn somehow with Bryce Brown, you know, that basket doesn't drop and they lose the game to Kentucky. I mean, how far off is the middle ground of where Duke and Virginia stand right now compared to maybe where Auburn and Kentucky is? I mean, I'd love for you to like to compare those two matchups and the talent that they have.
Yeah, I think right now, to me, there's a very clear top three in college basketball. And it's funny because, you know, I talked about this on my podcast last night. I encourage everybody to download that show, the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast.
Yep.
I think it was good for college basketball for Virginia and Michigan to lose this weekend. Not because I root for anybody to lose, but because, you know, when polls come out, right, like, basketball is different than football, we get it. But, like, you know, generally, if you're undefeated at this point a year and a team has one loss, you're going to say, oh, Michigan has to be above Tennessee in the polls because Michigan's undefeated and Tennessee has one loss. And so now that everybody has one loss, I think it's good. We can step back, we can peel back the layers, and we can say, okay, nobody, we don't have to put anybody up top straight. strictly because of the fact that they have zero losses on their resume. Let's look at who's actually the best teams. And so, to me, I think right now there's a very clear, to me, this is just my opinion, there's a clear top three in Tennessee, Gonzaga, and Duke. And I think any of those three teams, I would feel confident, you know, depending on how the bracket shakes out, saying that they could win the national championship. Obviously, Gonzaga beat Duke. Duke beat Tennessee. So I feel good about those picks. I think Michigan State, who actually has a really big game tonight against Maryland, yep, is right behind them. I think they're totally flying under the radar right now, in large part because of how good Michigan is. And then I think after that, there's probably five, six teams, Virginia, Michigan. I think Kentucky, based on the way that they played against Auburn, the way that they're coming together, I think that they're in that group. Maybe Kansas, who isn't quite as good as normal this time of year, especially without Azubuike, who obviously played against Tennessee. So that's where the hierarchy falls to me. I will say, though, like I do think that it was weird, right? Because you talk about the Virginia-Duke game. I had a different takeaway than a lot of other people. A lot of other people said, you know, Virginia, it was a one-possession game on the road, blah, 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 blah. I actually kind of saw it as the exact opposite. Is it felt like Duke, anytime Duke wanted to get a basket from R.J. Barrett or Zion Williamson, they could. That Virginia had no answer. And I still think Virginia is good. Like, I'm not going to do the whole UMBC thing. But I do think that if Duke played that game 10 times against Virginia and Duke wanted to win and Duke was locked in, they would win 10 times. And so that's why, to me, I would put a team like Virginia just below what I believe is a top three, maybe a top four if you want to include Michigan State.
Moving on to around the SEC a little bit more than Auburn, Kentucky, you've got an LSU squad that seems to be performing well down in Baton Rouge. You've still got Mississippi State, Ole Miss that are hanging around, and you look what's going on in Columbia, South Carolina right now, Aaron. There's a lot of teams that I think we're about to find out just how good they are once this SEC schedule picks up, and then also once these guys start playing each other, you know, for the second time in the year. I'd love your overall perception right now of just how wacky that the SEC is when you have teams like Ole Miss, South Carolina, LSU, a team that's kind of been not living up to their potential the last few years in the Tigers. I mean, where do you see the SEC right now?
It's fascinating. It really is. And, you know, I still think Tennessee's probably the clear-cut number one. I think Kentucky is making an argument for a clear-cut number two. And then I think after that, it really is going to be style of play, how teams match up, and who do you get on what night, or, you know, is a team motivated, all that kind of stuff. And I think that middle tier is going to play out a lot like the SEC did last year, where we saw that record eight tournament teams, and you watched on a night-in, night-out basis, and it felt like just about anybody could beat anybody else. I really couldn't tell you who I feel great about right now, other than really just Tennessee, because even Kentucky has been inconsistent. They have a massive game against Mississippi State this week, or this tomorrow, excuse yep. me, on Tuesday. And it's like, if Kentucky, it's great you just won in Auburn, but if you don't come out ready for Mississippi State, those guys, that team with two senior point guards in their backcourt, they're going to make you look bad. And so I think Mississippi State can emerge. I think to your point, Trey, I think LSU is a fascinating story to me because they probably have three or four guys that are going to play in the NBA. They're all freshmen and sophomores, and so how does that team handle adversity when they go on the road? You know, they won at Ole Miss last week, but, you know, was Ole Miss riding high after being ranked? I don't know. Does Ole Miss come back down to earth? What about Florida? You guys saw them a week ago. I think they're better than 2-3 in the SEC. And honestly, South Carolina, I have no idea what to make of South Carolina right now. So to me, look, I'd like to put on my, you know, I know you bring me on this show to have strong opinions and tell you how it's going to be and look into the future like Tony Romo did last night.
Oh, my God.
I cannot do that with SEC basketball. If you're looking for Tony Romo of SEC Hoops, you're talking to the wrong guy, because I think there's about eight or nine teams that on any given night can beat anybody else.
When you're looking at okay, let's switch over for a minute. You brought up Tony Romo, so that's going to be a nice little segue into the NFL. Aaron, what was your thoughts on the Saints game and the way that ended yesterday? I know they blew a lead, but that almost looks like an asterisk by that game just because of the I don't want to call it a tragedy, but the horrible way that that game ended with the Saints driving to be able to kick a game-winning field goal. What was your overall take on it? I know the Rams are a really good team, man, and they're playing some great football, but it just seems like it was kind of just stabbed right to the back of the Saints yesterday afternoon.
You know, selfishly, look, I picked the Patriots and Rams in the preseason, so I like to puff out my chest and say how smart I am and all that stuff. I'm really not, but, you know, I like to say I am. So, you know, to me, it's weird. Like, I kind of see both sides. It was a terrible call. There's no doubt about it. I did like, you know, guy from your guys' neck of the woods, Clay Travis, saying that a coach should be able to throw a challenge flag on a judgment play when it's that egregious. I know that it'd be really hard to overturn, but I feel like there's got to be a way to retroactively throw the flag when it's that obvious. When the cornerback himself, after the game, is asked about, he said, "Yeah, I kind of did commit. I came up from the ground looking for a flag." I would also say, on the flip side, though, you know, I said this the other day during the game. So when I worked at FoxSports.com, I did a big piece on kind of those early 2000s Miami Hurricanes football teams, and I vividly remember Ed Reed telling me, "Yeah, we used to try to blow everybody out, because we knew that if we left it in the hands of the officials, they would find a way to screw us over." And so I thought about that a little bit yesterday, because you can blame the refs for that loss. I get it. But let's never forget that the Saints had, in the first two possessions of the game, were in the red zone driving and had to settle for field goals. Let's never forget that Sean McVay, by the way, who was getting crushed for kicking the game-tying field goal early in the second quarter, down 13-0, converted a fake punt. If they don't convert the fake punt, the game's over. And so to me, you know, I just don't like the idea that, right, when like, and we all watch football, we all love football. When, say, a kicker misses a game-winning field goal, what's the first thing a coach says? He says, "Well, it didn't come down to one play. This one kid didn't lose it for us, blah, blah, blah." I just feel like it's the same thing in this case. Is you can be mad at the refs, it was the wrong call, but the Saints had so many chances to ice this thing, to put it away, and they didn't. And oh, by the way, you know, they still had a chance to stop the Rams to not getting in field goal range, this, that, the other thing. So I see both sides. I'm sure there's probably a lot of Saints fans listening. I understand the frustration, but it wasn't only the call that cost them the game.
What'd you think of Pat Mahomes and the way he was able to handle himself on the big stage against Tom Brady coming in? And look, I know the Patriots ended up winning that game in overtime, but that was a fun game, and it was almost the changing of the guard. But Tom Brady's rolling on into the Super Bowl versus the Rams, and he's still kicking, especially at his age.
Yeah, that was one. You know, it's. I'm glad you guys asked about Pat Mahomes, because I really felt like, because of the way the game ended, like, I don't think we've remember, like, that was Patrick Mahomes' second career playoff start.
Yep.
It was for a trip to the Super Bowl, and he was awesome. And his defense did him no favors in the first half when they couldn't get the Patriots off the field. And I think, honestly, he played well, but that wasn't the best that he played. There was a couple plays right before halftime where he overthrew a guy, could have been a touchdown, this, that, the other thing. So to me, I think that is being a little bit lost in the shuffle, right? We came into yesterday saying, is it going to be a changing of the guard? Is Patrick Mahomes the next great QB in this league? Is the torch going to be passed from Tom Brady to Patrick Mahomes? And I still think, in a weird way, it was. This wasn't, you know, Patrick Mahomes throwing four picks, getting embarrassed, Bill Belichick has all the answers. This was just two great teams going back and forth, and it's, like, really corny to say it's too bad there had to be a loser, but it was kind of too bad there had to be a loser. It was a really good game, and, you know, I thought the team that deserved to win won, And, you know, I don't say that as like a Patriots apologist or whatever. I do think that how well Mahomes played kind of got lost in the shuffle.
Hey, on your way out, man, is Tony Romo just the next great NFL announcer? Like, the way he's able to break down plays and see them before they happen. I mean, it kind of blows me away. Like, I think we can agree from his tryout to where he is now. Wow. Okay. Big change.
Well, it's really funny because he was doing this a lot last year. And, you know, I think there was, like, some pushback from management. And I will say this, like, you know, I've worked in TV in the past. And, like, especially on a game broadcast like that, it's one thing if you have a studio team like Kenny Smith, Charles Barkley, whatever. But I do feel like they do try to suppress the broadcasters. You know, the old saying is, like, you know, you're not there to watch the broadcast team. You're there to watch the game. And so I think, like I remember even reading earlier this year that, like, CBS kind of tried to get him to tone down that kind of stuff. And so I'm so happy that he just kind of said, screw it, and just went for it. You know, he went for it, you know, more than all four coaches combined went for it yesterday. And look, it's preparation. He knew what he was doing. But I think so often, you know, in these big games, we try to get these broadcasters to be like robots. And I think Tony Romo's personality shows. I'll be honest, I had no idea that he was as funny as he is, as engaging as he is. And I'll say this, independent of nailing every single play call for, like, you know, four quarters plus overtime, it's just so clear that he loves the game of football. It reminds me of a Dick Vitale or a Bill Raftery in college basketball, where you can disagree with Dick Vitale's analysis, but nobody can deny that dude just loves being in a basketball gym. It feels the same way with Tony Romo. And I'm with you guys. I hope he's calling games for the next 30 years because I really enjoy his calls. I learn something from him. I just have a blast listening to him break down football.
No, that's a good point, Aaron. He really is. He's taking this game. You can tell he's put a lot of work into it. Aaron Torres, tell everybody where they can follow you, your podcast, and your great shows.
Yeah, well, I think I'm on air on this station every Saturday night. So, you know, if you're driving around, you know, 8 to 11, you know, tell your Uber driver if you had a few drinks, turn me on. You know, I probably sound better after a few drinks, so that's good. And then, of course, follow me on Twitter at Aaron_Torres. That's where all my writing is. That's where my podcast is. Just put out a podcast today. If you enjoyed this show, I have a 1,000% certain belief that you will enjoy my podcast. So go subscribe to that show, listen to it, rate and review it, all that good stuff. Thank you guys, as always, for having me.
Aaron, thanks, buddy. Have a wonderful rest of your week, brother.
Thank you.
Aaron Torres, fantastic interview, as always, from Fox Sports. College basketball aficionado, really good at what he does. I tell all of you, go listen to his podcast. Let's go ahead and take a break now, getting that look from my producer, so we'll catch you on the other side. It's Optional, Fox Sports Knoxville. It's Optional, roll along here on Fox Sports Knoxville. If you are in the market for a job at Vanderbilt University in the offensive coordinator department, you can apply now at Indeed.com. That is Indeed.com. That is not a shameless plug. That's just a look. If anybody is in the right offensive mind and wants to take a job, Brandon, you should apply there and see if you get a response. Put down your Maryville legend. You played ball. Whatever.
I think I'd be able to help him out.
You had a cup of coffee. Actually, you had a cup of coffee on the walk-on team.
I don't know. I don't know if I could help him out. They put 47 up against Tennessee, so I'd be hard-pressed to put up 48.
That's a good point. That's eight. So, okay, Saturday. Okay, mainly Sunday. So Sunday, when everything was going on, college basketball was over with, the NFL gets started up. If you had to pick which game yesterday intrigued you more, in a sense of competitiveness and just craziness, was it Chiefs-Pats, Brandon, or was it Saints and Rams?
I mean, they were both good, but I was looking forward more to Chiefs-Patriots just because the storylines were better. Like, the young gun versus the legend.
Did you see Marcus Peters whatever, just run over there at Sean Payton after the game?
Oh, yeah. Marcus Peters wants all the smoke, man.
Yeah, we talked about that before.
I know. Sean Payton talks a little trash. Marcus Peters wants all the smoke. He'll come to your house. He'll eat your food. He'll stomp on your couch and walk out the door and smile.
Just seemed a little classless.
Classless?
Maybe they were excited.
No one was saying that when Sean Payton talked trash.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's the thing. Like, I was going to say Sean Payton was talking a lot of trash.
I was talking about more or less just really just running up to him, getting in his face. I mean, come on.
Peyton's like had altercations like on the field with players though. Like he's like cursed out players on the opposing team and been talking trash. I don't know, man. Like I kind of like it. You come in, the story gets out. You come in with the wheelbarrow of cash, and you tell your players. I mean, he's trying to get his players hyped up for the run. But hey, man, the Rams did it. And was it a bad call? Bad no call? Yes, it was. But as Aaron said, I mean, Breeze had an opportunity in overtime. That's one. They were up 13-0. Got to put that away. And the same thing. I agreed with him when I was watching that game because I was actually watching that my other job. I was watching it at work, and whenever they got that fake punt, and if I'm not mistaken, they were in their own territory when they attempted that, right?
Pretty sure.
Yeah, they were in their own territory. So that was a really, ballsy call by Sean McVay, and they converted on it. And if they don't get that, that was when they had to get something. They were just backs against the rope. They don't get that, they lose that game.
They were dwindling.
And the bad thing about that was the Saints were in the safe. They had Taysom Hill out there, and they kind of they saw it coming, but they didn't. They didn't make the tackle on Sam Shields on the outside. Former Green Bay Packer made a nice move to get free for the first down, but they had the safe. Taysom Hill, I'm pretty sure if I remember, he spotted it, and they're like trying to get over there, and nobody makes the tackle. You got to make that tackle too.
I agree so much. And then the Saints kicking field goals first. Two drives, you had to have a touchdown.
You got
to
get those touchdowns.
Somewhere in between.
Got to give the defense credit on the Rams side for bending but not break, not breaking, on those drives. So, and then Goff. All right, so Saints shouldn't have lost that game. I don't feel bad for them because they had everything. Like you said, they get out to the early lead, but you're not capitalizing, getting touchdowns, so you're leaving them in the game. Secondly, their fans were amazing. Jared Goff, we all kind of know, if you guys are not familiar, but the way the Rams have a lot of success, how they kind of call plays. They get up there with 40 seconds on the play clock, and then McVay reads everything for him, and then they're like changing up the play calling at the line of scrimmage instead of him making a lot of reads pre-snap himself. So the Saints fans were amazing how loud they were. He couldn't hear anything. He was so flustered. Like, they had everything on their side, but they just didn't go out and score when they needed to. Breeze didn't look as good. The Rams had a good game plan. Outside of Alvin Kamara getting killed by the linebacker over and over again, like on that one drive when he just murdered Littleton, I believe was his name, or Little John, whatever the linebacker for the Rams was.
Yeah.
He was eating him up. Besides like them like really taking advantage of Alvin Kamara just in the passing game and in the running game, the Rams did a very good job.
No, I agree. Okay, so I can sit with that. That also the Saints kind of blew it in a sense of them not being able to score in pressure situations, especially when they got down inside the 10-yard line. Incidents on the 20. They weren't. Look, I was kind of hoping that Breeze would make it to the Super Bowl this year and that he could just ride off into the sunset after the season. Super Bowl or not.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of what I was hoping.
Yes.
Because Drew Breeze has
I thought
done
that was
so
going to happen too.
Right. He's done so much for the game. And now you have to wonder, okay, is this what Tom does? Win the Super Bowl, ride off in the sunset. And I think he gets very. If L.A. wins the darn Super Bowl and dethrones the Patriots, I mean, that's a...
He'd almost have to retire. He went full circle.
Yeah, right.
First
right,
Super
right.
Bowl win against the Rams.
Yeah, I think it would be against a fitting way Kirk to go Warner. Out.
That's a great point. That's a great point. I don't know what to think of it if Brady tries to come back. I can't see him coming back next year.
I think he could.
Like he could? Yeah, he could.
I mean,
he's not taking many hits. I mean, hell, the NFL giving him personal foul calls when the guy taps him on the shoulder yesterday.
It was the letter of the law, not the spirit of the law. I agree with you. Shouldn't have been called.
What
but
the hell
was
the letter of the law?
That if you make contact with a quarterback's head, it's a penalty.
He gave him a love tap.
And that's what I'm saying. That's not the spirit of the law, but that is the letter of the law.
That was sickening. They called that a personal...
I mean, I was
on third down, too.
I was pretty undecided about who I wanted to win between the Saints and Rams until I heard Whistle Guy and then saw his picture.
All right, that pissed me off.
Then I wanted nothing but sadness for him.
I couldn't tell if the damn play was whistled dead before. Like, Vanderbilt's got a guy that whistles at a baseball game. He whistles the whole game, okay? This whistler was just rolling when the Rams had the ball. So I couldn't tell that the play was blown dead. Like, okay, they're playing extra here? Like, what's going on? And even, you know, pre-snap. When you've got Goff lining up back there in shotgun, I'm like, okay, why are they blowing a whistle? Is it a delay of game or something? No, it was just some stupid fan in the stands.
Oh, it's terrible.
They let whistles get into the stadium. Like, I saw people with whistles around their neck. I was like,
oh, there they go. They deserve to lose.
I was like, well, how is this happening? It was like those things in South Africa years ago where they had the World Cup. The Vuvuzelas, yeah. Those things were cool for the first game, but then they're like, damn it, they won't be quiet.
Sound like a herd of West Nile mosquitoes over there.
I couldn't enjoy any of the soccer matchups. And I was sitting there having to listen to these at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's pretty sickening. Good first hour, Aaron Torres. I appreciate him coming on with us today. Dan Harrelson going to join us about 2:10, 2:15. Then I'm going to scoot off to campus, and Chance and Brandon are going to be taking you home. I love the conversation with Aaron Torres. Tennessee basketball is number one in the country today. I know these two in here are through the roof. And look, I am very happy.
Number one.
For Tennessee fans being number one in the country now. Excited. Get it out there. Let it shine. Pretty much a year to the day. A couple weeks off, but a year, 10 years. Memphis, now the Tennessee, Alabama game. It's all come full circle now. Tennessee basketball is the number one team in the country. We'll be back on the other side. We'll talk more about this. It's optional, Fox Sports Knoxville. Stayin' alive.